Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And it is a beautiful morning today, is it not, Rabbit?
It is. But the reminders it's going to be cold upcoming.
Yes.
And, of course, Miss Ann's terribly worried about that, like she always is. She gets nervous when winter's coming on, even though it's still September. And there are almost three more weeks of summer left. But we are continuing this week with coverage of a summer destination that's a favorite of a great many East Coast Americans, the lovely state of Maine, where we covered last week's program in and around Portland, Maine. And this week we're going to adventure further to the north.
Do you know, everybody I talk to says Maine's hot right now. I mean, not temperature-wise for the weather, but everybody seems to be going to Maine.
Well, I think it's a back-to-basics kind of thing that, you know, the people can, many people drive there. I mean, we saw lots and lots of vehicles.
For sale.
But the biggest number of people, there are all these SUVs and crossover vehicles and all this kind of stuff, absolutely filled to the brim with bags. I've never seen so many bags in my whole life. I don't know how people manage to pack these things up and then transfer them. And several children as well. So it seems like family values are back and family vacations taken in the SUV or other vehicle seem to be the way to do it. Certainly that was the appearance. And we saw that further north as well, although it was much quieter. So our first stop on our visit to Maine was in the city of Rockland, which is well known for a wonderful art museum, I think called the Farnsworth Museum, right, sweetheart?
Yeah, we didn't manage to get there.
No, we didn't manage to get there. But
the Wyeths, all of them.
Yeah, there are some Wyeths who were up there, and your old friend Bob Indiana lives not too far away in a place called Vinyl Haven, which always sounded to me like a make of kitchen furniture. I didn't realize it was V-I-A-N-L. And Rockland is also an important ferry port if you're going further up the coast or to the islands and you want to do it the scenic way.
But we went there
for a different reason.
Yeah, we went there to see Melissa Kelly, who has a restaurant called Primo, and she was ahead of the farm-to-table movement by a mile. I mean, how many years ahead of it? Did I ask her in the interview? I can't remember. But let's hear what she has to say.
At least 15 years she's been involved with it, but more importantly, for the last 8 years, she's been doing it in a very real sense, because Primo in Rockland, Maine, for that matter, Primo in Tucson, Arizona, and Primo in Orlando are all the same, in that right next to the restaurant is a farm where a lot of the product used in the restaurant is actually grown.
Including pigs and chickens.
Yeah, in Maine, I think Melissa said she has 7 or 8 pigs and about 180 chickens, so they produce all the eggs, and they do a once-a-year harvesting of their pigs and put a lot of that into their charcuterie program. So we were delighted to have the chance to talk to Melissa on site and in person.
Melissa Kelly, it's been a while since we talked. We've talked, at Women Chef and Restaurateur meetings. We've talked about your previous books. And I guess for those who have not heard these interviews, can you just do a real brief explanation of who you are and how you got here? And we are, of course, in
Rockland.
Land, Maine.
Yes. Well, a long road. I grew up in New York and traveled all over the country working in different kitchens after going to culinary school, and decided to settle here because when I met my partner, Price Kushner, he kind of have maybe a life and also...
Because I was going to ask you why, since you're so interested in growing things, why you'd be in Maine.
You know, honestly, this is one of the best places to grow. Our season is really long. We had an amazing growing season this year. And if you're smart about it, I mean, I have 2 greenhouses, you can really continue your season through the year. There's Elliot Coleman, who's a gardener up here in Maine, grows only in the wintertime. And he says because there are no bugs.
Oh, no, that's good.
So he's smart.
Yeah. Now, your partner is a pastry chef. That's an interesting reverse role, too, isn't it?
Yeah, usually it's the other way around. But he's a baker and a pastry chef. And now he runs the dining room, selects the wines for
the wine list.
Yeah,
he
does the wine program,
too. Yeah,
so,
they say the pastry chefs are going to be the next big stars after the butchers. We had the chefs. Celebrity chefs. Then we had the farmers.
Right.
Now we have the butchers. And now we're going to have pastry chefs.
Yeah. It would be nice to know a little bit of everything. That's the best.
Yeah. Okay. So you decided you'd like to settle in Maine.
Mm-hmm. And we've been here now. This is our 11th season. My fast track was I worked for Larry Forgione. I worked at Chez Panisse out in California. Worked with Melvin Masters in Denver for a little while, and then I settled in New York, upstate New York, at Old Chatham Sheep Herding Company.
Right, which is where I first encountered you.
Right, and there it was a sheep dairy farm. We made cheese, we slaughtered our animals for the table, and we had a big garden, and so I learned a lot there. We also had pigs there. And then when we decided to do our own thing, Maine was just the place that we had in common, and we thought that it would be a great place and affordable and on the ocean, everything we were looking for. And
it's really pretty, I must say. This is the first time I've ever been here. Peter's been here before. This is my first exposure.
It's my first time in Rockland. I've been in Maine before, but only on business, never to really explore what it was like. But this is not just a restaurant. First of all, it's a big restaurant, but yes. It's a property. It's a farm as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We keep bees. We have 7 pigs.
Now, I wonder, why did you bring bees from Italy?
Well, it's the variety of bees that happens to do well in this climate. And so there are colonies of those bees here in Maine. So we just kind of followed the trend on what would be the healthiest in this climate.
And so, and you have how many pigs?
We have 7 pigs. They're heritage breed, Tamworth large black crosses. We have 180 chickens. We have Golden Comets, Black Sexlink, and Barred Rocks. And so they're producing all of our eggs every day for pasta and gelato, all the pastries, all the eggs that we use in-house. And we slaughter the pigs in the fall, and then we have a big charcuterie program. We make prosciuttos and salamis and pâtés and terrines and all kinds of get our hands really into it.
Well, how many people do you employ?
A lot. Probably almost 50 in the summertime.
Well, that's not considering all you do. That's not
Yeah,
fun.
But it's a great crew.
And you have, let's just for the record mention, you have 2 other restaurants.
We do. We have Primo in Orlando, which has been there for 8 years. Oh, gosh, 8 years now. I can't even believe it. And in Tucson, we've been there. We're going on our 6th year. And they're both in JW Marriott hotels. They both have gardens, and they both feature local and sustainable food from the area.
And you've been on this for years. This is part of your philosophy. It has nothing to do with trends. This is what you believe in, and this is what you do.
Absolutely. I think the trend's catching us right now, but this is the way I was brought up my whole life. I grew up with, my grandfather was Primo Magnani, and he was from Bologna, and this is how we lived. We had a garden. He went fishing. He went crabbing. We ate in season. He made wine, and he was a butcher. So, I mean, I just was totally immersed
and
in
food.
And
he was from Bologna.
And he was from Bologna.
How can you go wrong? Probably the richest food city in the whole universe.
Yeah, you know, food was always just like the ribbon that tied our family together and our friends and our whole life, and food was always like the integral part. Every memory has something to do with a cookie or a dish or a drink, or, you know, every memory for me has something to do with food, with something edible.
Now, so what, I mean, you've been at this for quite a long time now. We understand a little bit about how your philosophy of food was formed. What has been happening recently? Because you're a very dynamic person, and I know you do not stand still.
No, well, the most recent thing we did was this, just about 2 months ago, here in Rockland, Maine, we opened an antipasti lounge upstairs.
I love this. Go ahead.
And it's a counter where you could sit at the counter. It's not a bar. There are drinks served from the other bar, but we don't have alcohol behind the counter. It's just a chef working and preparing lots of small plates. We feature what's coming out of the garden fresh that day or locally from some of our farmers. Tonight we have a local prosciutto with some of our honey and, our prosciutto, our honey and some local melon. And we have padrone peppers, which we grew in the garden that we just cook on the plancha upstairs. We have some local celery root hash with some of our bacon and apples that are just starting to come into season.
The first thing I smelled was the bacon when I walked into this restaurant.
I'm sure, yeah. I like
which is in an old Victorian house, and it's really quite lovely.
Thank you. The house is about 130 years old, and it was a restaurant when we purchased it, but it was a little rundown, so it took a lot of TLC. So we know every inch of this building now, inside and out.
Now, has your philosophy evolved any? I mean, it's been pretty standard, but there have been all kinds of new things happening.
Yeah, there are new things, the trends, and I visit them, but I always really stick to the classics and the rustic and the simple. And, the trends, I read about them, and I might dabble here or there, but I don't think it will really ever influence me dramatically.
What are your particular favorites on this menu? I must say this is a stupid question because you change your menu up according to what you've got by way of ingredients and everything coming from your garden. You change it every day.
I do.
And I mean, it's far-reaching. But just basically, I think listeners like to hear about food. Mm-hmm. So if you could just pick a few dishes and talk about them.
Sure. Well, something actually that's not on the menu but we have tonight is a local wild boar that's raised up in northern Maine. It's on a 500-acre farm, and this is the most beautiful meat I've ever laid my hands on.
Oh, I'm having that.
it is gorgeous, and the fat is just as beautiful as the meat, so please don't cut the fat off. But we brine it lightly. I made a brine with brown sugar and savory from the garden and a little bit of crushed garlic, peppercorns, and mustard seeds. And then we grill it over a wood fire. And then we're serving it tonight with grilled green tomatoes, local corn, fava beans from the garden. Yeah, and it's just incredibly beautiful. And then, again, the seafood is also amazing here. We have a local halibut tonight, which we're doing it with a risotto and a lemon butter sauce that has some pea tendrils from the garden and some fava beans and lobster, of course, in Maine.
Which one's that now?
The halibut dish tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So those are two favorites for the evening.
I imagine your salad sounds spectacular.
Yeah, my favorite salad on the menu is the escarole salad, but that's how I grew up eating lots of bitter greens. But it has a very light, creamy anchovy dressing on it. It's almost like a fancy Caesar salad. Shaved pecorino, so it's sharper cheese and toasted walnuts. It's yummy. It's really comfort food.
Well, this West Keeg Farm corn soup sounded heavenly.
The soup, yep, the farm is right down the road, literally 5 minutes a stone's throw from here, and we get our corn from there. They have a beautiful farm. We get our strawberries, blueberries, and corn from this gentleman, and it's very simple, light, fresh, sweet corn soup with steamed mussels and some little cornmeal crusted Maine shrimp.
Well, there's not enough time to eat all of this, so.
Well, we can send you lots of samples.
It's just wonderful. Now, for people who want to come here, a website, do you take reservations?
We do. We're on Open Table online, but we also through the Primo Restaurant. It's www.primorestaurant.com. We'll take a reservation through there, or you could call the restaurant either way. It doesn't matter. So we're available to take reservations. We do close January through May.
That's right. I meant to ask you that.
Probably very sensible.
Yes.
Now, when we arrived at 5 o'clock because we knew that's when you were available, and a cook came right then, and they didn't have a reservation, but you have open seating upstairs.
The antipasti
bar.
Yes, and our bar as well. We have a few lounge tables, so we do leave a few areas unreserved, which tend to fill up very quickly at this time of year especially. But the rest of the restaurant will be reserved for the evening.
Yeah, I was very smart. I made my reservation on Open Table about 3 weeks ago.
Perfect.
Long before I talked to Melissa, because I only talked to Melissa this afternoon.
That's right.
And we're so glad to be able to catch up with you at such short notice. And
can I ask what's next? Because you need to give us some sort of scoop.
Well, I think I definitely want to work on a book. I always said, from the ground up book, from growing something to harvesting at different stages, and something that I'm very intimate with my produce, with my product that I use. And there are a lot of chefs that are really connected today, but I don't know if they've had the experience for the amount of years that I have working hands-on with a farm. So
that would be a good book.
That would be a fun book for me to do, and that's what we're kind of thinking about.
Keep us posted, Melissa.
Thank
Look
you.
Look forward to tonight's dinner, and I'd love seeing you. Thank you.
Thank you. Great to see you both.
Bye-bye. I think we should also mention that Price Kushner, Melissa's partner, he's a big help with the growing. And also he does the pastry, sort of a reverse role here. And also we popped into the kitchen after dinner and saw Eliza Jamison, our friend's daughter, who's a chef. And she was firing that wonderful boar, the local boar that
right.
was so heavenly.
Yeah, she was, they call her the grill queen, I guess, or something like that. We should also note, incidentally, that Price Kushner not only does pastries, which he does in the morning, he explained, but he also manages front of house in the evening, so he's a busy guy. They're all busy people, but it's a great place to go.
I was really envious of the fennel because I've never been able to get the bulbs. I mean, I do, you know, the other kind of fennel, but she had very healthy-looking bulb fennel.
Yeah, we have some photographs of the farm. Maybe we'll put one or two of them up
That'd
on the
great.
Website.
Yeah.
There's okay. something else you want me to put on the website, too. I've got to remember to try and do that, too.
Okay.
But
well,
now
anyhow,
it's, time,
now it's
to
time to take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
You're listening to On the Menu. And we're giving you a report on our really pleasant excursion into Maine. Next up, how do we say this? Damariscotta.
the Damariscotta River Grill.
Yeah. And we did learn. What does that mean? It's an Indian name.
It means a river of many, many fishes, I think. And there are many fishes there, and the lobsters feed on those many fishes, so there are lots of lobsters. It seems a relatively recent development. Wonderful oysters named Damariscotta River, or also named Penniquid after the local peninsula that's close by. And we met Rick Hirsch and his wife, who are both very, very busy because they have two restaurants. The first one they opened 23 years ago in a small village outside of Damariscotta. And then more recently, the Damariscotta River Grill, which is right in the middle of a really nice shopping district in the center of town.
Which is where we went.
Yeah, which is where we went. And we had a wonderful interview with Rick, followed by a great lunch. So here's Rick Hirsch from Damariscotta River Grill.
I want to know why this river is called the Damariscotta. Well, can you tell me, Rick?
I can. It's an Indian name that means a river of little fish, many little fish.
Oh, that explains
and
your logo.
We have a fish called the elwive that runs in the river every spring, very much like the salmon. They go up the river to the Damariscotta River Lake where they were spawned, and they return just like the salmon to spawn in the lake again. Ah. So every spring we have this run of the elwive. Which
elwive.
Is, yeah. Elwives, yeah. That's little fish.
That's the one that's spelled A-L-E-W-I-V-E.
You know, I'm not 100% sure how you spell it, but I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. We can check it out.
We've been focusing on aquaculture recently.
Right.
Somewhere in Paul Greenberg's book on aquaculture, there's a reference to this fish.
Yeah. Well, they're a wonderful lobster bait, evidently. They're not the best eating fish, but that's what the name means. It's an Indian name for river of many fish.
Well, I should say that we are talking to Rick Hirsch, who with his wife Jean owns the Damariscotta River Grill in Damariscotta, strangely enough. And you also have another restaurant, too?
We do, the Anchor Inn Restaurant, which is located in Round Pond,
yeah,
which is a small village in the town of Bristol, about 15 minutes from Damariscotta.
Now, you are not from here. Is Jean?
No, Jean grew up in Pennsylvania, and I grew up in New Jersey, but we did meet in town here at another restaurant. We both were working in the same restaurant 25 or 6 years ago now when we met.
Now, does she do front of the house and you chef?
That's right. She's the front of the house guru, so to speak.
I see. Right. Now, you studied all kinds of other things. And how did you end up in food?
Well, I went to a business school at Ohio University and found that I like to travel. So the more I traveled, the more I realized that if I could cook, I could find a job anywhere I wanted pretty quickly. So that's what I did. And then as I cooked in multiple places, I realized I enjoyed it and had a little bit of a knack for it. So I decided to go back to culinary school. And in 1988, I graduated from Johnson & Wales in Providence, Rhode Island.
And then you immediately opened?
See, actually, that's true. Yeah. That summer was when we first started the Anchor Inn. It was actually a restaurant that existed for years, but in the summer of 1988, my wife and another woman who we had been working with got the lease on the building, and we started that in 23 years ago.
Wow. And no problems with it? You love it?
Well, not every day.
I know that one well.
But for the most part, it is definitely a labor of love. The month of August is definitely our most challenging here in Maine. It's our busiest time, and we get to a level of business that the facilities aren't really capable of handling well.
The volume, yes.
You know, the rest of the year, particularly the winter months, is when we have to, you know, have an affordable facility. So we get July and August, and September is still a very good month for us, but July and August is kind of crazy.
So, but basically then your clientele is based on the tourism industry.
This time of the year, yes, but for the rest of the year, no, it's locals.
Now, are the menus different between the grill and the other restaurants?
Yeah, completely different. The Anchor Inn's menu is more Maine fare. It's on a beautiful little lobster harbor, so the lobsters come into the dock right below the restaurant, and we lots of different lobster dishes, baked stuffed lobster, lobster stew, lobster rolls, lots of fresh grilled fish, and local mussels and oysters and fried clams.
That's what I like.
That's what you like?
That's what I want.
You want some fresh lobster. Well, you're in the right place.
I've been dying for it.
Matter of fact, this is the best time of the year for lobster. The end of the summer and the fall, when the lobsters lose their shell in the middle of the summer, the meats tend to be a little bit softer, and now the shells are hardening up and the meat is growing back in, and it's perfect right now.
Now, is there a truth in this? I've been reading and I've been telling Peter that I heard there was a glut in the lobster market, and I can't find any cheap lobster.
Well, last summer, when the lobster market, when the stock market was having all its problems and the economy was crashing, there was 1 million pounds of lobster that had already been caught and were in pounds here in the state of Maine, and we couldn't sell them. So the price of lobster crashed just like everything else was crashing.
Not where we live, it didn't.
So that has since recovered.
Okay.
I think the lobster harvest is still very strong this year, but there isn't this glut of lobster that we had.
Now you said something interesting there, Rick. You said that the lobsters are caught and then they're kept in.
Well, the local guys catch them, sell them to a wholesaler,
okay.
And then the wholesalers had a lot of crates of lobsters that were floating in,
okay.
You know, in their storage facilities, you know.
Okay, so they keep them up, so the middleman, if you like, keeps them
right,
alive.
Exactly,
okay.
Yeah. And then we had just so many lobsters that couldn't be sold, but that has since recovered. But the price is still a little soft here in Maine. You can buy lobster in the $4 a pound range right now.
Oh boy!
Yep. So it's still a little on the soft side.
Now let's talk a little bit. Now we know that that's a big part of the menus in Maine restaurants. I mean, seafood, lobster, particularly shellfish. Is there anything else that I should note as part of the culinary culture of Maine?
Well, certainly here in the town of Damariscotta, we've become extremely well known for our oysters.
Oh, good.
The Damariscotta River is growing what most people are referring to as the Pemaquid oyster.
Oh, I was going to ask you about that.
This is the Pemaquid Peninsula, which runs down the river follows the peninsula down to the ocean, and I don't know the total number of people that are growing oysters, but there's a number of them, and the oysters are getting tremendous reviews, and we're selling tons and tons of oysters, many different ways. Here at the grill, we do them on the half shell with three different sauces, a classic shallot mignonette, a jalapeno relish, and a homemade horseradish and cocktail sauce. And at the Anchor Inn, we're buying a jumbo oyster and shucking those and breading them in a cornmeal breading and frying those with a kind of Cajun dipping sauce.
Wonderful.
So we're selling, I believe last year I was told by the guys we buy from that we bought over, each restaurant sold about 10,000 oysters for the year. So we bought over 20,000 oysters last year. So that's been this town is becoming really, really well known. And you'll see them on menus and in good oyster bars all over the country.
Yeah, I have. They were called Damariscotta River oysters,
right, yep,
rather than the other name that
the
you mentioned.
The Pemaquid oyster, yeah. They're fabulous. The waters here are just so right for growing these oysters.
I can promise you we'll make a contribution to your quantity
today.
That'd
be great. You should definitely sample them.
So what else is signature about this menu, which is, it looks, how can I say, it looks very interesting. It looks very personalized to you.
Very personal, and to the rest of the crew in the kitchen as well. There are items on here that our sous chef had brought to our attention, or one of the line cooks might have tried it as a special. Items on there that were developed by people that have worked here in the past that are still on there that have been very successful. So we take a lot of input from the people that are working here and try to develop some interesting dishes.
What are your most popular signature?
Well, one of the most, and oddly enough, it's not seafood, but we're doing a duck confit risotto with butternut squash and dried cranberries, which has been incredibly well received.
Already moving into fall, huh?
Well, we actually started it on our winter menu, and it was so popular that we changed it up a little bit last summer, but didn't like it as well, so we just went back to the original. And even though it has butternut squash and cranberries, which, like you say, are very fall-like, it's still very popular in the summer. But our lobster cakes sell very, very popular. They're fresh lobster meat and pan-fried with a sweet corn sauce. Mm. And any fresh fish that we do, most of the things on the menu are selling pretty well.
Well, it looks just wonderful. You also give growers credit, so you have that farm to table. I would expect this in Maine to be very strong.
We do try to point out the local people and give them credit on the menu where we can.
What else do you do in Damariscotta?
Well,
besides,
you mean as a
shop,
visitor?
A cute shop, yeah.
Oh, as a visitor? Well, there's fabulous canoeing and kayaking opportunities, hiking, wonderful hiking trails around. There's beautiful coastal scenery. The peninsula the coast of Maine is made up of a lot of fingers and peninsulas that go in and out, so we have tremendous miles and miles of coastline here.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember. I wish I could remember the stat, but I think maybe we have as much more coastline in the state of California because it meanders in and out so much.
Yeah, it's interesting. We were reading that recently about Greece.
Because
there are so many coves.
That's
and
right.
Beaches.
Exactly.
There's an immensely long coastline and lots of places where they do aquaculture. Now, we've got to come back to this rest because we forgot to congratulate Rick on the fact that he was selected this year as best chef in Maine?
Well, it was the Maine Restaurant Association. I was voted the 2010 Chef of the Year for the state of Maine.
Congratulations.
Have you won that before?
I have not, no.
So that was pretty good.
Yeah, I was very, very proud to be recognized by my peers in the industry as someone that's worth noting.
And you also do some interesting things with wine. First of all, you have a Wine Spectator Award.
We have received the award for the past 3 years and have a wonderful woman named Sharon Hobson that's our wine director who chooses most of the wine and has helped develop the wine list. So now, we have a very active wine club and really have developed a real following for the wine.
Now, driving up the road, we saw a wine outlet, I guess. And one of the things it said, and I'm not sure I was convinced of this, but I'll ask you, they said you can get your Maine wines here. Now, are there really wines made in Maine?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And would you recommend them?
Well, probably the best known one is Bartlett, and they're making a lot of fruit wines, pear and apple wines. And then there's a couple of people that are now growing their own grapes here in the state and developing their own wines. So, yeah, it's becoming you know, more and more available to us.
Now, you got recognition for something else, too, in the wine area, I think. I think the word was affordability.
That's right. Yeah, the Wine Spectator gives out, as a footnote to the list, they recognize the people whose lists are affordable.
Okay, so you do that consciously?
We do, yeah. You know, we are very cost conscious here. You know, people perceive Maine as an inexpensive place to come on vacation, and we try to fit that bill.
Now, there's all kinds of interesting art on the walls, including a highly stylized duck or a swan or whatever it is. But what I'm looking at is something that says "Friends Gather Here," and underneath it is a rack of wine bottles. Is there a connection between those two, or did you just decide "Friends Gather Here" just needed to be on the wall?
I'm not really sure where that came from.
Okay, well, there we go.
I like the lobster hugging the bottle.
Hugging the bottle, but yeah, that's pretty cute. We have a very active art program here as well. We change the art every 6 weeks, and we've had many, many, many different artists here throughout the years. And
that's in Bob, Indiana. He lives in some island off the coast of Maine.
Who's that?
The pop artist, Robert Indiana.
I don't know.
The famous love painting.
Oh, yeah. He was just showing at the Farnsworth Museum recently, I think.
Yeah.
They had a show of his art.
Is that in
Rockland.
That's where
you're heading there to see Primo's. That's where they are.
Okay, great. This is a well-met occasion. Rick, we're very pleased to have had the opportunity to meet you. I have one piece of advice for people if they're driving from the south. You get one chance to get off U.S. Business Route 1 to get here most directly. We passed it all up and came back south again in order to get here. So be careful. It says today it said 1B. The R was missing, so maybe that's what threw us off. But right in the center of a really very smart shopping district in Damariscotta is this wonderful restaurant where we're about to have lunch.
Well, and, I'm so glad you could join us today.
And one thing we must mention is the website.
Oh, absolutely,
with information about it. And you better spell out Damariscotta.
Well,
you're all going to cheat.
Of course, yeah. So it's the DamariscottaRiverGrill.com, and it's spelled DamariscottaRiverGrill.com, RiverGrill.com, or the AnchorInRestaurant.com. Either one will... you'll get to both our websites, and, of course, they're both linked together.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay in Maine.
Me too.
And now it's time to take a break, and on the other side, a very interesting new activity in the state of Maine, and we'll just keep that as a surprise till you tune in after the break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
You know, I have the feeling that this is what started this whole big interest in Maine for us, was we interviewed the guys from Cold River Vodka, and then before we were setting off for Maine, we were dealing with their publicist, Front Burner PR, and they sent us an announcement of their very first production of Cold River Gin, which is to die for. Take it from there, Robert.
Curiously enough, it's actually made from potato ethanol, the same spirit as they used to make the vodka.
Right.
Although they don't publicize that, because I guess a lot of people don't think gin would come from something like potatoes.
Oh, it's so flavorful,
it's
this
It's extraordinarily
gin.
Fine gin, and this is an extraordinary artisanal operation. Lots of hands-on, lots and lots of heavy lifting, lots and lots of carefully orchestrated work in order to produce these two fine products. And Bob Harkins gave us a tour and told us all about it.
Yeah, it was fun for me because I've seen the inside of how many wineries now. But I think the only one other distillery.
Well, ever. You've actually been to several distilleries, but you just don't remember. I mean, one's pretty much the same as another one, but this is a really fine operation and one that you should pay attention to. And they think they're going to grow too, so you're going to hear more about Cold River Vodka and gin, I'm sure.
On the menu, just discovered that Freeport, Maine is the most visited location in the state of Maine. Our guest Bob Harkins from Maine Distilleries and Cold River Vodka said this is not the reason why people come here. There's a different reason.
Well, they come to taste and sample this wonderful vodka and gin that we're making here.
But what you said is the main reason people come to Freeport, Maine is because of L.L. Bean.
It is. L.L. Bean is certainly the anchor, and there are several other outlet shops there. So Freeport is a big attraction when it comes to shopping.
And you said when you started the business, you wanted to be close to Freeport for that reason.
Exactly right.
Now we have talked before.
This
is a non-traditional Maine business, isn't it?
It certainly is. I mean, we at the time when we started, we were the first distillery in Maine. You know, there are a couple have new ones that have just started, but we were the first.
And Bob is a return guest, of course, on the Menu Radio, because we talked to him as they were developing their vodka product. But first of all, we happened to be in Maine, so we thought, well, what an unneighborly thing it would be not to stop by and find out about the process, which we'd only heard about on the phone. But there's also something new going on. But first up, we had the opportunity to see what you're doing downstairs, making this stuff from potatoes all the way through. It's really quite a remarkable sight.
Thank you for that. And welcome to Maine, the two
Thank
of you.
You.
And you explained it very, very well.
Yeah, I even understand it. It's very close to middle school science class.
It really is. There's certainly a lot of science and chemistry to it.
Right. And I'm amazed how the volume you can produce out of such a very compact, I think we'll call it, facility.
We do get a lot done in a small space.
How about a couple of statistics? How many pounds of potatoes coming in, and how many bottles of vodka going out?
Right now, we're using about 30,000 pounds of potatoes a week, and from that, we get roughly 200 cases of vodka, 12 bottles in a case.
There you go. So that's each month.
That's correct. So week to week, month to month.
But you're producing something new every single day.
We are, yes. And do we want to talk about what's new?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, we've just brought out another product. And
yeah, I was just going there, but you jumped ahead. That's
okay,
perfectly
I'm sorry.
Fine. No, that's perfectly fine. Go ahead.
Well, we are now producing Cold River Gin, the only ground glass, all natural.
Now do that again. You blew that by pretty quick. Ground to glass means the potatoes come out of the ground.
Correct.
And you do everything to them after that once they get here so they go out in a bottle.
That is correct.
Well, actually, they even supervise the growing of the potatoes.
Right. We do own one of the partners owns a potato farm.
But
so
I was worried about the ground glass thing. I thought,
yeah.
and curiously enough, I don't know if you know this, but way, way back in the pre-dawn of wine closures and other liquor closures, they actually used to use glass on glass as one of the closure mechanisms. And it was considered very pure, but it was also considered very expensive and perhaps not all that effective over time as well. So I just wanted to make sure, ground to glass, we were not talking about the same thing.
Well, you know, Bob walked us through this process, which they're sort of, they correspond, the vodka and the gin, pretty much.
They do.
And I was amazed at how much human hands-on is involved.
It is a very labor-intensive process, particularly at this stage of the game for us. Batch process, you know, you are constantly working on that batch in one fashion or the other, whether it be, you know, cooking the potatoes on the front side to fermentation, to three different distillations, and that's, even before you get into the bottling process, which is also done by hand. Bottles are hand numbered by the batch, hand stopped, hand tagged, put in the boxes by hand. So you're absolutely right.
Now, what's the secret in the production of Cold River Gin? Is that you start from the same wonderful natural product and the same extraordinarily pure process?
That's exactly right. We're using the same potato alcohol that we use in both our Cold River Vodka and our Cold River Blueberry Vodka. That is the base for our gin. We are infusing that alcohol with juniper and six other spices and botanicals in a traditional recipe, redistilling to produce our gin.
Okay, and that's the back end of the process. But it's not just a single redistillation, you told us earlier, either.
On the gin, it is two more distillations.
Okay. Now, in case people aren't alert to this, there's a reason why it's blueberry flavored as your currently only other flavored vodka. We talked about the fact that vodka is neutral enough to accept flavorings. Blueberries are another major product of Maine.
Exactly.
And they're extraordinary.
Yes. So that was a very natural choice for us. We looked, the flavored market in vodka is very, very big. Blueberry was just a very natural choice.
And you said this was vodka is probably one of the most competitive spirits markets.
It certainly is. It seems to be, particularly in the micro distilling category, the craft distilling category, it's a way a lot of new distillers get into the game. Vodka's, you know, is very, very popular. So it's very difficult to set oneself apart from everybody else in this. It, you know, it's 30% of the overall market, spirits market, is vodka.
Whereas gin is what percentage?
I think gin is about 8 or 9% of the total spirit.
And you're going to make yourself a mark up against what other kinds of products do you think, Bob?
On the gin side
on
of
the
things?
Gin side, yes.
You know, Tanqueray, Beefeaters, Bombay Sapphire, you know, those are some of the big names. Tanqueray is, I think, the number one brand, gin brand in the world. So those are our competitors.
Now, what about all these other funny names like Belvedere and Chopin?
On the vodka side.
On the
vodka side,
but there
sure
are some people in the gin space.
Yes, there are.
The Kettle One makes a gin. I've forgotten the name now.
I didn't know Kettle One made
Kettle
a gin.
Kettle One makes a gin.
Darn, there's a new one on me.
I'm not sure. I don't remember what it's called, but they do make a gin-based spirit. So you're jumping into that category with
both feet.
Optimistic of success?
We are. You know, we are. The Cold River brand has been developing very nicely and growing into new markets, and I think we've certainly gained a lot of ground and have a reasonable amount of respect in the industry, particularly in the craft category. We're still very, very small, but we've gotten some great accolades for the brand. You know,
you've won awards.
We have.
Yeah,
definitely.
I mean, top vodka world. That's pretty good.
We'll take it. We'll take it.
So,
definitely.
So gin's going to follow in those footsteps.
Yeah, you know, you kind of build on that equity that you're developing in your brand, and hopefully we'll see that success in the gin.
But you're very particular about every inch of your production. We talked about the purity of the vodka, and I said, I think this is why I like it so much. It's really, but with some character.
Exactly.
I haven't tasted the gin, but it's a little early today. We're going to do that before the program's broadcast. Packaging is absolutely gorgeous. What's on your vodka bottle? Photograph.
The photograph is actually, it was an illustration that was done by an artist here in Portland of the Freiburg Valley, where our potatoes are grown. And the Cold River is a real river. It flows out of Evans Notch, the White Mountains of New Hampshire, into Maine, into Freiburg Valley, and disperses into the ground, into an aquifer. And we pull water from that aquifer to use for...
Yeah, I wanted that mentioned, because that to me makes it very special, too.
It does.
It's a real aquifer, right?
It's a real aquifer. The Cold River is a real river, you know, our namesake. So there's an authenticity to the brand that really goes right from all the way through it, from the fact that we grow our own potatoes, the Cold River water.
Yeah. And you play, for some reason, Celtic music here. Why?
Because one of our distillers, Joe Swanson, is an Irish guy. And
he just likes it.
He loves it. He loves it. There's usually something going on. He brings his banjo.
You turned it down when you were giving us the tour, but they had turned it back on again by the time we came.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about, I mean, if somebody's coming to this part of the world, you can come here for a tour and buy T-shirts and hats. And
you can. That's one of the reasons we really wanted to be here in Freeport, was to take advantage of that drive-by traffic and bring people in, give them a tour, tell them our story, and provide them the opportunity to do a little shopping. They can purchase a bottle or one of many logoed items to leave here with.
Now, how can people find this in distribution?
Probably the best way is to go through our website.
Okay.
Which is, right now, coldrivervodka.com. It'll soon change to maindistilleries.com, but a Google search on Cold River, you'd get it in 2 seconds.
Okay.
There is a list on that website of the different markets that we're in that will also include, liquor stores, restaurants, and bars that we're in.
Great. Well, we tried the Cold River vodka. We're about to try the Cold River gin. I'm sure it's going to be just as good. And you're going to want to find out where you can get it in your neighborhood. Bob, thank you for being such a wonderful host and explaining the process to us so well.
So we'll say bye-bye to Maine, but stay with us on the other side from this break, because we have something else to tell you about.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, we're back, and as promised, we're going to turn our attention to another subject altogether. I always love when I find a restaurant with a really talented local chef, or find a restaurant, a local restaurant with a really talented chef.
We're talking about a restaurant that just recently opened a few weeks ago in Pittsburgh. The wonderful thing about it is it's only 300 yards from our house.
Yes.
And it's called Spoon. It took the place of a restaurant called Red Room. Spoon is going to do fine. Spoon is going to be a wonderful operation, and here's the chef and part owner to talk to us about it.
Chef proprietor Brian Pekarsik of Spoon. How did you end up in our neighborhood?
Oh, geez. I will try to give you as watered down and brief answer to that question.
Yeah, you've been all over, haven't you?
My business partner, yes, I have traveled all over. And I've been fortunate to work for some really great chefs, and my business partner and I, Rick Stern, we were getting ready to close a deal in the former Cafe Allegro.
I know about that.
In the South Side, and just days before we were getting ready to close and sign that deal, Rick was having dinner next door at Dinette and had noticed that the former Red Room, the space was dark, and he started to inquire about it. Lo and behold, we found out it was closed, and he had known Tom Dixon, the owner of the building, from business deals. And once we really started to poke our nose into it, we moved forward on this deal fairly quickly. I think from beginning to end, we probably had a lease signed within a matter of weeks. So when I had relocated back from California,
you were in San Diego?
I was in San Diego for 6 years on two different occasions, and I was in San Francisco for almost 4 years.
Where were you in San Francisco?
I was really fortunate to work and help open up restaurant Gary Danko in San Francisco.
Oh, we love Gary. You saw he's on our webpage?
Yes. I was one of the privileged to be able to work for him,
he's
especially
fabulous.
Part of one of the opening team members, and when we first got the coveted five-star mobile five-star review, and then it was the James Beard Best New Chef and James Beard Best Chef California Pacific. So there was a lot of accolades that came in, and I was fortunate to be a part of that opening crew. And then I spent 4 years back down in San Diego with Chef Bradley Odgen.
Yes.
And I was his executive chef at Arterra Restaurant.
You've been to Arterra. Have we both been to Arterra? Well, you don't have a mic, so it doesn't really matter what you're saying.
One of Bradley Odgen's other... Addison, that's a stone throw from Arterra.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
So, now, what lured you back to Pittsburgh?
Well,
you're originally from
Pittsburgh. I grew up in Murraysville, so I am a Pittsburgh native. But my wife and I had our second child, and when she was pregnant with our daughter, we knew it was time to come back east. My wife was born in San Diego. She went to high school and college in the D.C. area.
Oh, really?
So we knew we were going to come back somewhere on the East Coast. We didn't know. We didn't necessarily just have our sights set on Pittsburgh. We thought maybe D.C. or Baltimore or Philly or one of the bigger job markets. And then through the Marriott connection, because Bradley Odgen's restaurant Artera was affiliated with the Marriott in San Diego, the concept more or less ran freestanding of the hotel. So I had that kind of Marriott connection, and that's what brought me back to the Pittsburgh Marriott.
Because when I interviewed you, you were at the Steelhead Grill in the Marriott City Center.
Correct. So I spent just about 2 years with the Marriott in Pittsburgh, and just having, I think I was brought aboard, and I had accepted that position with some different notions on what we were going to try to do with the food and beverage program. And unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, depending on, matter of perspective, I guess now I would say fortunately, things necessarily didn't work out that way, and it really kind of got me looking for other jobs.
Now,
and
your wife is a pastry chef?
No. She's not. She is, she's not in the business. She is here in the restaurant and, tends to help out, but she has her own career and, she is a working mother, so she stays, probably busier than I do here at the restaurant.
I would think so. Yeah. Now, you were the person then that your partner, Rick Stern, was talking about, as you occasionally find somebody so talented that you have to open a restaurant for that person.
Oh, wow. Wow, I didn't realize he had said that.
He did. He was quoted as saying that. So you are the one?
I guess, yes, then I am the one. It's funny because how we met was I applied for an executive chef position at Rick's other restaurant, Willow, in the North Hills, and I started cooking for him, and I did a few dinners for him, and he was just so impressed. He said, we need to open up a restaurant together.
Okay, well, that's what he, but he's sort of an accidental restaurateur. I mean,
exactly.
He grew up in the same business that I grew up in, the movie theater business.
Oh, okay. Yeah, small world. Yeah,
yeah, that's it is.
Really, I think in my profession, to find and to stumble across somebody like Rick has just... It more or less was just like winning the lottery, because he is extremely passionate about restaurants. He loves great food. He knows great what it takes to make a great restaurant. And, and obviously having the financial wherewithal and the business savvy sense to make restaurants successful,
right.
It was perfect partnering up with him.
You've just totally redone this place. And it's drop-dead gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
It's beautiful.
We've had a, with Rick. Rick was heavily involved in the design and build-out of the restaurant. And Jen B., who was the restaurant designer, she was formerly with Edge Studio.
Yeah, which
and
I love.
And she had just broken out on her own. So I'm not sure. I think this may have been one of her first projects that she's done on her own. But her and Rick have worked together. And she designed Willow, and she was one of the major kind
which
of...
Which I think is the prettiest restaurant in Pittsburgh.
Oh, right? Wow. Yeah, so we hopefully this will, after dinner tonight, hopefully this will be a close runner-up. But
well,
between
I'm expecting
Jen,
great things about the food here.
Yes, I'm
now,
excited.
Dan, your style rests heavily on local producers and fresh produce and that kind of thing, right?
It absolutely does. You know what? It's funny because
it
was really influenced heavily from working with the chefs that I've worked for in California, one of which was Bradley Odgen, and of course he was one of the pioneering farm-to-table chefs with Alice Waters and Jeremiah Tower, and we would change our menu daily based on just what was available, and we utilized Chino Farms and Crow's Pass Farm and Valdivia Farms, and we such an overabundance of local farmers in Southern California
well,
that we were
the,
able to
the
use
listed here
that
on your menu, your dinner menu.
I think it's really important for our diners to know where the product is coming from, that they're what they're eating, and I think it's also a great way to also showcase all of Western Pennsylvania's local farmers and artisanal producers.
So that's really the lodestar of what you cook.
Absolutely.
Ingredients.
And a lot of it is, you're at the mercy of the product that they deliver. And we're fortunate enough.
They don't grow the same here in southwestern Pennsylvania as they do in San Diego.
Yeah, maybe not. The seasons aren't quite as long, but certainly when we're in peak season, I think Western PA has a great product to offer. I've been really happy, and it's been a lot of fun with really trying to base the menu around what's fresh and what's local.
Yeah, and they're characters, aren't they?
They are. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah,
when it when you kind of break through the initial business relationships, they are, you know, Western. Yeah. Western Pennsylvania is by heart, so they're good people, and they're down to earth.
So now, what kinds of I'm sitting looking at your menu. What kinds of food will we be eating tonight? Can you just pick a few of your favorites about this?
I really think my concepts, I say modern American, but that's such an overused kind of term at this
Everything's
point.
Everything's overused anymore.
Yeah, and it's like, it encompasses so much, but I think even more than that is, I like to say my style is a refined comfort. I'm certainly not a molecular chef by profession. I want people walking away from what they're eating.
Oh, I just saw French fries. That's my kind of
Yeah, that's our fried potato with truffle aioli dipping sauce. So you can't go wrong with some fried potatoes and truffle aioli. That makes everything taste better. But
What are some of your other signatures?
Some of my signatures would be the gorgonzola blue cheese souffle.
That's interesting.
With the stone fruit salad. That's the cold salad changes based on the seasons. Obviously, right now being in peak summer, I am utilizing Kistico Farms and McConnell Farms stone fruit. As we get into fall, of course, that will change into local apples and pears. As we get into winter, that set will change into pickled beets and candied fennel and citrus. So it's a really versatile, and it's all based around the blue cheese souffle. Again, the local heirloom tomato tasting, which you guys will try tonight, I think is outstanding. New Way Farms, their product and their quality of tomato is just amazing at this time of year. And I like to do that.
Bacon and eggs is an appetizer.
The bacon and eggs is a lot of fun. I think that's starting to become a quick fan favorite. But I was really also influenced by some chefs in California like George Marone. I've had the pleasure of working with for a short amount of time, who, of course, was Michael Mina's mentor at Aqua. Mm-hmm. And really utilizing proteins in multiple ways on a plate. So I say refined comfort because you take like the veal entree. For instance, it's veals, a veal dish prepared two ways, and really the one side of the dish is a veal meatloaf, and it's done a little bit more refined, and it's a little bit different than what you would expect from a meatloaf, but when it's all said and done, it's still meatloaf, and I want my food to be approachable, I want it recognizable, but I like to do it in fun and contemporary ways that people may not necessarily have thought of doing before. So that's another dish that I certainly would want you guys to try.
Yeah, well, this is really, I mean, it looks like a fun menu. Now, we're doing this interview in your lounge, which is it's already a bar lounge with its own little menu, right? And you can also order off the main menu here.
Correct. It is, right now, while it's slower during the week, we have a limited lounge menu, kind of a bar snack. I have a pork terrine and ham hock croquettes, fried potatoes
good.
That you guys, of course, saw go out. I have a smoked salmon deviled eggs with a sauce gribiche. So it is a little bit funner of a bar snack type food. We will, of course, also offer hamburgers and flatbread pizza. Right. And then, of course, this is just really to bridge the gap before we open BRGR, which is going to be our upscale burger bar concept.
Exactly, that which everybody's very excited about.
We think it will do very well in this space. It's a great, with the garage doors and our patio rooftop deck, and in this thriving neighborhood, we think it's going to be a smash. And
well, there are two other things I wanted to mention. One, you have a full-fledged pastry chef.
Yes, we do.
So I'm expecting a whole raft of great desserts.
Pastries is one of those areas that I am not afraid to admit I know nothing about. I don't have the patience. Great pastry chefs, you need a lot of patience and precise measurements, and that is not something that is my strength.
I don't bake anything.
Yeah, I'm not a very good baker, so when I knew the size of the restaurant in this area, that was one of the first things that I went out to do was to find a great pastry chef. And it, a lot of times I think it's really difficult to find for a chef and a pastry chef conceptually and style-wise for their styles to mesh and match.
Right.
And that was one thing that really attracted me to Krista Owens, is the pastry chef's name. Was her style, and it was very similar to my own. And then once I tasted her desserts, it was a no-brainer. She's coming from, she's also a transplant. She's coming from Tucson, Arizona. She was at the most recently at the Lowe's Resort in the Vitana Room, which is a 5-star, 5-diamond property.
Wow.
So her level of pastries is amazing, and I think she's going to make a big impact here in the Pittsburgh dining scene.
And the other issue is your wine and spirits list. Do you have trendy cocktails?
We do.
A really fabulous bar chef.
No, we have a great team of managers behind us. There's, of course, Holly Chipman, who is our bar manager, who has kind of taken on the whole bar arts program.
She's wonderful. I've interviewed her before.
She has a great signature cocktail line. She does all fresh squeezed juices, house-made infused
Muddles
simple
everything,
syrups.
Fresh
everything
herbs,
is made in-house, of course. And with her is Tobin Feingold, who is our sommelier. And we are fortunate to have a true certified sommelier. She's a WSET third tier. She came from L2O in Chicago.
Okay.
So she is another transplant here into the city, and
she is a
great addition to the team.
And how is she adjusting to buying wine in Pennsylvania?
You would probably have to ask her that, but it certainly has been a challenge.
It looks to me like every wine on the list is a special order.
Yeah, it certainly has. I know she is utilizing a lot of different suppliers.
There were a couple I picked up on, interestingly enough. She may not even know that Gary Eberle is a Pittsburgh native.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Started out on his career of inventing Syrah in California by playing football at Penn State.
Oh, no, that's a fun fact. You should really kind of bring that up to her and test her to see if she knows that.
Interesting enough, we just did an interview and it airs in Sunday's program called Great American Craft Beer, and somebody's picking from that particular area as well on your menu because you have some really unusual labels there.
And even that was Holly's doing. She also put together our craft beer selection, and again trying to have a great representation of local craft beers, and then again going with some obscure. We're not one of the bar lounges that have the luxury of having 25 or 30 selections on draft. We have not only 14. That's a respectable amount.
That's respectable,
but
yeah.
What we wanted to do was really go after some different makes in distributors that they can't get in every other bar and lounge in the city.
Well, I'm looking forward to a wonderful experience here, Brian, and it's really been a pleasure to actually talk to you face to face. It's always been over the telephone.
Yeah, yes. No, it is great to finally put a face with the voice and name. So I'm excited to have you guys, and I'm even more excited to start cooking for you guys. So I think we should have a great night.
I'm looking forward to it.
Good.
Thank you, Brian.
I am as well. Thank you.
Well, I think that just about wraps another program.
It does. It does wrap another program, and we'll see you again same time, same place next week.
Bye-bye.